Okay, so the first thing we have to figure out is whether Avram had any converts in the first place. I know that sounds a little bit silly, but that is really the more important thing. Yeah, the more important thing is to try to figure out if Avram had any converts in the first place. We're going to have to work on this. In the beginning of this week's parsha, we get to meet Avram Avinu, and we see him leaving his homeland of Haran, of Ur Kasdim. I'm coming to Eretz Canaan. For the first time, for the second time, there's a bit of a question when exactly was his first time coming, but this is certainly one of the first times he has been to Eretz Canaan. He leaves, and the pasuk tells us that he brought together with him his wife, Sarai. At the time, it's Avram and Sarai, although I'll probably be saying Avram just by force of habit, but Avram brought Sarai, Lot, his nephew. This is his brother's son. This also happens to be Sarai's brother, right? So he brought over his nephew, as well as, it says in the pasuk, HaNefesh Asher Asu Becharon. Nefesh Asher Asu Becharon. The wording is strange. Now, to translate that literally, we translate as the souls that they made in Haran. That they made in Haran. The word they made, Asu, doesn't make any sense. You don't make souls. That's not what you do. Aside from that, the word nefesh is strange. Why are we calling them souls? Yes, please. Yes, exactly. That's the other thing. We're going to say nefesh is strange because, number one, it refers to the soul and not to the bodies, the people themselves. And number two, it's singular. Nefesh, the nefesh, Asher Asu Baharan, it seems to be only one person, let alone more than one. It doesn't seem to say it that way. So we have to understand what exactly is going on over here. The truth is that the most logical explanation, and is given by the Ibn Ezra, is that it refers to the slave labor that they had. I mean, back then, wealthy people all had slaves. And then nefesh, asher asu b'charan, seems that it would refer to the people that they owned, the people that they took with, the actual slaves that they had. The only problem, well, there are many problems with that explanation, but it doesn't answer any of our problems. That would not be referred to as a soul, that would be referred to as bodies. They wouldn't have made them, they would have bought them, right? And it wouldn't have just been in Haran, it would have been in Ur Kasdim as well. It seems to be that the pasuk is specifically mentioning something which we're trying to figure out, and there's something missing. There's just something that we need to grab onto that we just don't understand. So what is it exactly? So Unkelus, when you're looking at a pasuk and you want to translate it correctly, now we have art scroll. Baruch Hashem for that. And the Mitsuda, as well as all the other explanations. Back in the day, you always used Targum Unkelus. Targum Unkelus, Unkelus was actually a ger, a convert to Judaism, who lived around the years of 100 of the Common Era, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He was related to Trajan, the Roman Emperor, and in a farther away way from Hadrian, the Roman Emperor who eventually killed the 10 martyrs, the Asaru Gemalchus, or 8 of the Asaru Gemalchus. He was related to both of them. Unkelus learned under Rabbi Yoshua ben Hanania and Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus, two of the rabbis of Rabbi Akiva. It's possible he was there at the same time as Rabbi Akiva. And he made notes on the Chumash, when Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer would try to explain the Chumash and whatever they would learn, he would write notes. And that was known as Targum Unkelus, the translation of Unkelus. There are questions if this that we have today is exactly the version that Unkelus wrote almost 2,000 years ago, or is it something that's similar based on what he wrote? That is a bit of a question. But regardless, Unkelus wrote in his Targum a basic translation of every word in the Chumash so that if you know your Aramaic, you will have no problem translating it and figuring out what to get from it. Unkelus says that these people that they took, the Nefesh Rasu Bukharan, were people that were Meshabed themselves to the Torah. What that means is that they subjugated themselves to the official line of what God wanted from them. If Hashem wants this from me, this is what we'll do. There were people who understood what Abraham was doing. Avram was not the first monotheist. I would hope not. Noah was probably a monotheist before him. And I'm sure that there were people around. Shem would have been around. Aver would have been around, who were the son and the great-great-grandson of Noah, who were around, who were also monotheists. But he was the first person to publicize that idol worship means nothing to God. It is not a manifestation of God. It is not a way of getting closer to God. Idol worship is nothing at all. And that's something that people at the time did not understand. And these people that were with them were people that understood this. They took it. They said, you know what? This is exactly what everybody should be doing. And they followed Avram. They said to them, we're going to be that way. It's as if their souls touched them when they were in Haran. There were things that Avram Avinu did when he was in Haran, and the people that he affected just by being around. Those became the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Haran, the people who were affected well and went along with Avram Avinu himself. Now, Yonasan ben Uziel was a Tana who lived earlier than Unkelus. Yonasan ben Uziel was a Talmud of Hillel HaZaken, the elder Hillel, who would have been three generations before Unkelus. Yonasan ben Uziel also has a translation. This is definitely taken based on Yonasan ben Uziel, but it is not the words of Yonasan ben Uziel itself. This would be around the year 10 of the Common Era, maybe a little bit earlier. That's the idea of where it is. Yonasan ben Uziel says these people were actual gerim, actual converts, people that converted to Judaism while they were in Haran. We're not talking about people who just understood the ideas. The wording of Yonasan ben Uziel is that they were actual gerim. Now that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of Avram as being the first Jew. I would have thought of Avram as being the first man who publicized God. But being the first Jew, I wouldn't have necessarily said. But according to this Yonasan ben Uziel, he was a Jew, and when he told people to follow him, he told them, convert to my religion, which wouldn't have been known as Judaism then. That comes from the word Yehuda. Yehuda had not been, will not be born for quite a while, but convert to my Abrahamic religion, and everybody should be together with me. And those were the Gerim, the Nefesh Asu B'Haran, were not just people who understood Avram's ways. There were people that followed Avram in everything he did, and whatever he told them, they did. When Avram Avinu got a bris milah at the end of the parsha, they got bris milahs. For the woman, for those that needed to go to the mikvah, the woman went to the mikvah. They took on whatever it was that Avram Avinu said that they had to do, they followed him wherever he was. When was this by Avram Avinu's life? There's a bit of a question about this as well. According to the Rambam, Avram Avinu realized that something was wrong at the age of 40. He was living under his father Terach in the land of Haran / Ur Kasdim, and he realized something was going wrong. Something was different, and he couldn't understand what. And he went and he delved into it and eventually realized there must be one God on top of everything, and that idol worship means nothing. That was Avram Avinu's job. At the age of 40, he figured it out. There's a Medrash that says that he figured it out at the age of 48. 48 altogether. Now, it's interesting. The age 48 seems to be something that I would take for myself, and I'll tell you why. Avram Avinu was born in 1948 of the Hebrew calendar. It's about, give or take, almost 2,000 years BCE. Okay, it's around 1680 BCE. He was born in the year 1948 of the Hebrew calendar. 1996 was Migdal Babel, the Tower of Babel. That's when, as we all know, the people were all around. They built that huge tower, right? And they were scattered afterward. That happened in 1996, again, of the Hebrew calendar. That was 48 years after he was born. So the Medrash that says that he was 48 when he found God corresponds with when Migdal Babel happened. Now, again, we have a dearth of information of Avram Avinu's life before the age of 70. There's just not enough. There are Midrashim, but the Midrashim do not say ages. We don't know exactly what happened. We've all heard the Midrashim of Avram Avinu saying, you know, having the big idol with the stick in his hands. We all know the famous where he's destroying and doing this and that and the other. If that medrash that says 48, the Rambam maybe even says it as well, maybe there was a mistake in the printing and he's also going with 48. If it was at the age of 48, it makes sense. Nimrod was in charge of Migdal Babel, of the Tower of Babel. Nimrod is the one that threw Avram Avinu in the Kivshana Esh, in the kiln, in the huge fire. That we know, those are both facts, that Nimrod was involved in both of those from the Gemara, and it's hinted to in the Chumash as well, although again, the whole fire thing of Avram being thrown into the fire is not written in the Chumash, only hinted to. I saved you from Ur Kasdim, says God. I saved you from what? I saved you from the fire at Ur Kasdim. That we have from that. Nimrod threw him in. If Nimrod's in charge of Migdal Babel, and Avram Avinu was thrown into the fire by Nimrod, and that he survived, he came out and he was fine, we can extrapolate from that that it's possible that it was the Migdal itself, the tower itself, that Avram Avinu was protesting against. That he saw something wrong with the building of the tower, which the Psukim do not seem to say. He saw something was wrong, and he immediately went up and said, this is wrong. Either it was an edifice that was going to be used for idol worship, which Avram Avinu thought was wrong, or he saw that they were specifically trying to show that there is no God, we can do what we want, and we can even make a tower that is as high as possible to fight anyone that's out there, or whatever it is that their ideas were, Avram Avinu, together with whoever he had with him, were ready to fight, or ready to say, we have nothing to do with it. Now, that explains something. When it talks about the whole idea of Migdal Babel, it says that they made a huge oven in which they would make bricks, and they'd pour it in, and they'd come out with mortar. It would make sense that the only reason why the Chumash would tell us this, and we know the process of making bricks, we know that you need bricks in order to make a tower, is to tell us that that was the oven that Avram Avinu was thrown into. And that it happened at the age of 48, during the Migdal Babel, and then when Avram was saved from the fire, taken out from the fire and walked out, that's when the Tower of Babel was destroyed, and that's when he gained a following. The people that were there that saw this happening, there were people that were the scattering of those from Migdal Babel, however many it was, people joined Avram Avinu. Some of them were able to last, some of them not so. Some of them joined as Gerim, some of them joined as Avadim, as slaves, to be able to join them in whatever way they thought fit for them to be able to connect with this man, this monotheist that they had never heard before, they had never seen before, but they had just seen a tremendous miracle. From the age of 48 until 70 is when he went to Israel, possibly for the very first time, for the next 22 years, Avram Avinu perfected his system. Going around from place to place, at first in Haran, in Ur Kasdim, then around a little bit further down, trying to figure out what is the best way for me to get more and more followers. At the same time, Nimrod was making his own followers, getting people to follow him, saying that never happened. The Migdal Babel never happened. It's revisionist history. Right? Going around saying other things. Eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram, enough. You're not going to be able to be against Nimrod anymore. Nimrod is too powerful in that land, and the pull of his theories of just do what you want, there is no God, are becoming too great for you to be able to fight by yourself. Go to Eretz Canaan. And that's the Lech Lecha at the beginning of this week's Parsha. That's when he's told to go away, to stay away from everything that's happening. Now, a lot of this is extrapolation and not necessarily in text. I have some Midrashim that could be looked up in the Torah Shlema from this, but I believe if the numbers are correct, that's the way that we can learn up this entire idea. Now, let's go a little bit further. We still have not explained, even if these are Gerim, why it's Nefesh Asher Asa B'charan, the singular soul that's there. But that could be explained by understanding what Avram Avinu was teaching them. Avram Avinu obviously did not have the Torah that we have today. Obviously, he did not have a Chumash. It would be very difficult to understand who Moshe Rabbeinu was. Plus, he'd be able to see exactly what he was doing next. And that would be very strange for him to see the next things that are going out there. However, there were things that Avram Avinu was able to figure out from the world itself. Although our wisdom is not on that level to be able to look at the world and figure out what God wants from me, according to the Gemara, Avram Avinu was able to figure out certain mitzvot, like the mitzvot tzitzis, of wearing strings on a beged, which to us seems the strangest thing in the world. What is the point of having a four-cornered beged with strings on it? But Avram Avinu himself put on a pair of tzitzis. He was able to figure out the concept of Shabbos, of what Shabbos meant and what Shabbos was to the people. Now, he probably did not have the exact same Shabbos that we had, but he was able to figure out different mitzvahs. These things and more he taught to the people with one underlying theme. They say that Rabbi Akiva had a line that's called Zeklal Gadol B'Torah. It's a Gemara, Zeklal Gadol B'Torah, the general rule of someone who wants to learn Torah. V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. To love your friend as you love yourself. It's a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, and it's a concept of working on yourself. But it's not just simply you have to love your friend as you love yourself. First, you have to love yourself. You have to know what you are, your strengths, what you're good at, and you have to love who you are. And then you can go ahead and use that to try to understand what can I and can't I do when it comes to other people. In a way, it's almost impossible. If I don't love myself very much, and in fact, I'm angry and despise myself for things that I do, and I always yell at myself after, I can't believe I just did that, then of course you're going to act that way toward other people. I can't stand myself, so I can't stand you. Yatzal Recha Kamocha cannot be a line of just do what you would expect for yourself. It has to be more than that. It's working on yourself and then going further. Avram Avinu would teach the people how to love themselves, how each person was considered a Tzelem Elokim. You were created in the image of God. Every single person has a mila, has some type of a level that a person can get to where everyone is special. Everyone has something that they can call their own. And then once you find that, and you know where it is, you'll no longer be jealous of other people. You'll no longer want things that you can't have, because this is who I am. And if I'm this, I can't be that. Me, I could want a Bentley my whole life, or a Rolls Royce my whole life, but a Rolls Royce and a Bentley would not make me me. Can you imagine a rabbi in yeshiva driving a Bentley into yeshiva?
Sure.
That wouldn't, okay,
sure.
Then I give you permission to buy me one, but there's no way that's going to work in the concept of how am I supposed to live my life. If I know who I am, I understand that what I have is right for me, and I won't want something or ask for something that's not right for me, that's not something for me. That's the concept of what Avraham Avinu was teaching them. And then from there, each person should love the contributions of every person here. You may not like what other people do because it goes against your grain, something that I stand for, but you have to like what they stand for. You have to like what they have for themselves. Every person has to be different. And Avraham Avinu was not making cookie cutters a socialist regime, which was the Migdal Bavel, the idea of where everybody has to be the same, everybody must live together, everybody must do the same thing together. Avraham Avinu is living in a world where everyone is different and you should appreciate those differences. That idea of the Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, in a way, that brought people together like nothing else. Like nothing else ever did. There are unique differences, and we see that Avram with that. Like, he didn't force his son Yitzchak to follow his own ways. He told his son Yitzchak, find your own path and realize what you need to do for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as much as Avram stood for love and chesed and all those things, Yitzchak Avinu was the man of Gevurah, the man of Midas Adin, of ultimate judgment, of where everything is absolutely true and there's no such thing as something that stretches the truth a little bit. Out of love, we know, anybody who has had anything to do with anyone in this world knows, that out of love, sometimes stretching the truth needs to be done. Sometimes that has to be in order for things to work correctly. Avraham Avinu's world was like that. Yitzchak was not. Yitzchak was completely the opposite. The exact opposite of Avraham Avinu. And Avraham Avinu understood that and appreciated that and allowed Yitzchak to be the person he was without being like him. And therefore, the people that he had gotten, the people that he converted, so to speak, the people that were following him were truly a nefesh. They all considered themselves as one. Something that went together, helping each other and knowing that each one was for each other. When they saw that Lot was captured by the four kings in the war of the four kings versus the five kings, which seems to be the very first war in history, at least the first one that's written down that we have, that war from the four kings against the five kings, and Lot is captured. Lot is one of us. Avraham Avinu was able to bring about all of his men against 318 soldiers that he had. And there were no questions of, we're going up against four kings, Avram. We don't have enough people. 319 people is, simply put, not enough to go against. No, none of them said that. When we're all together as one, we're stronger than the individuals of the four kings' armies. That's what we can do. We can go together as a nephesh, asher asu b'charon, and we can defeat anybody in the world. And that's how Avram was able to defeat them. The idea of putting it all together and getting it over there. Now, that's, if we're learning this correctly, then we now have a way, a derech, a pathway to understand what happened to those people afterward. Avram Avinu had one protege that we mention in the Torah. One person. There were friends, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, are friends of Avram Avinu, but they were not the Nefesh Ras Bacharan. They were not his servants. They were not part of him. There was one person that really followed Avram Avinu in everything he did, and one person who he trusted that when he needed to find a wife for his son, he sent him instead. The man's name is Eliezer Eved Avram. He's known as Eved Avram. When Nahor asks him, possibly Lavan, Bisul, and Lavan asks him, who are you? What's your name? He said, Eved Avram Anochi. I am the servant of Avram Avinu. Out of such, the way that he treated his master, how he was subservient to his master so much, how he understood that Avram Avinu was so important that he, in his own mind, was nothing in comparison to his master, his name is not mentioned throughout his entire parsha. There's almost 80 psukim speaking about Eliezer Eved Avram, and none of them mention his name. His name is, in fact, only mentioned once in the entire Torah. One time, it says Eliezer, and it's Avram, when God tells him, you're going to have children, he says, I see that the only one inheriting me is domestic Eliezer. That's the only one. The only time we even mention Eliezer's name. Otherwise, he is a nameless, faceless Eved of Avram Avinu, because that's how they consider themselves. We have our individual characteristics, but we work together as one to be able to make one nefesh. It's the true socialism in the way that it works, instead of a communism that actually can work, as opposed to the way of where everybody feels like they're giving up to somebody else. It's something that Eved Avram was there. Eliezer, says the Gemara, was known as Damesek, not just because he was from Damascus, but because he was Dole Umashke Mitores Rabba. Says the Gemara, the word Damesek can be split up. Dole is the Dalet, he drew out, Umashke, and he gave to drink, that's the Mem, and that's Shinkuf, Damesek, Mitores Rabba, from the Torah of his Rebbe, from Avram Avinu. Eliezer was his Rosh Hashiva, his rabbi that he had put in charge of all these people. One of them, well, Avram was going and bringing in more people and helping other people find their way. The one who took them afterward was Eliezer Eved Avram. And it's funny, because after Eliezer Eved Avram does his job and gets a wife for Yitzchak, he disappears. We never hear of him throughout history. Nothing. We don't hear anything about Eliezer. The people that were with them are never heard from again. By Yitzchak, we don't see anything about Yitzchak having people with him. We see later on he makes Be'eros. He does have a button. There's no question about that. But he only seems to gain those servants when he goes to the Plishtim. In other words, where he's making his own. It's possible, and this is really stemming from a statement made by Chanoch Henoch of Alexander. The Alexander Rebbe, the very first Rebbe, the Hasidic Rebbe from Alexander, about 150 years ago. It's possible that this is what happened. Avram Avinu is, for lack of a better term, the Eshet Torah Rabbi. The Eshet Torah Rabbi who everything is good, and patting everybody on the back, and helping them along, grabbing their arms and saying, you're doing great, we love you, everything's great. And just bringing them up in such a positive experience. And then Yitzchak Avinu came along. And Yitzchak Avinu's methods were completely different. His method was more fire and brimstone. The Musa Shmuz of Avram Avinu was Gadlus Adam, how to make a person great. And although Yitzchak also concentrated on things that were similar, Yitzchak Avinu had a different way, a different style that was the polar opposite of his father Avram Avinu. And when Yitzchak Avinu got up and became the Rosh Yeshiva, became the Rebbe, became the one in charge, the people were not as infused with Kedusha as they felt they should be. They looked at it and they said, well, I mean, he's no Avram. And Eliezer was a person who was there. who saw his master Avram and felt that this was not the way to go, not the method of gaining new people, of bringing more people in. And Eliezer Eved Avram said, "All right, guys, it's time for us to leave. We're going to go. We're going to find our own place. We're going to find our own ways. And after that, we'll see where the real nation is going to be. Is it going to be Yitzchak's nation that's going to survive through time? Or is it going to be Eliezer's nation that's going to survive the test of time?" Now, we know who won. Yitzchak Avinu obviously won, but we don't know the details. There's a Gemara, a Mesechta Sofrim. It's in Perichov Beis. Mesechta Sofrim is one of the smaller Mesechtas. It's not one of the major ones that you learn in Daf Yomi. It's one of the ones that you only learn when there's nothing else to do, and there's something in the back, and you say, "Okay, I got to learn this stuff to Sofrim." In there, there's a line that says something unbelievable, and this is repeated by the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a compilation of Midrashim written a couple hundred years ago. It's also mentioned in Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer. Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer is a Medrash based on the teachings of Rebbe Eliezer ben Horkanus that says that Eliezer is the same person as Og, Melech HaBashan, Og, king of the Bashan. That man Og, who later on fought against the Jews and was ready to destroy them before they came into Eretz Canaan, that man, says the Medrash, is Eliezer Eved Avram. Now, let's get around the fact that that means that he was 600 years old. Let's assume that this was not the same person exactly, but it maybe was a child or a grandchild. That's not the issue right now. Either Eliezer lived for a very long time, and he was Og Melech HaBashan, or it's the methods and the teachings of Eliezer that Og propagated later on in life. Now, I know there's going to be questions about this altogether. Wait, didn't Og make it onto the Teva? Didn't he survive the Mabul? Right? How is that possible? I know. I realize there are machlokism in the Midrashim, although I could tell you, it is possible that it answers up a lot of Midrashim that people have questions about. You know, there is a Midrash that says that instead of 318 servants that Avram brought to war with him, he brought Og with him, Eliezer Eved Avram. Well, that makes a lot more sense now. If it was just him and Eliezer, Eliezer is the gematria of 318, the numeric value of 318. Well, it makes sense now that he brought a massive giant with him, and that would be part of the winning of the war. When it says that Og told Avram, told Sarah, what was happening by the Akedah, how would Og know what's happening at the Akedah unless he was Eliezer, who was present at the Akedah? There's a lot of things. It says that when Eliezer first came to visit Lavan, Lavan was scared of him because he was carrying camels underneath his arm and jumping over rivers. That's what it says about Eliezer. Now, Og can do that. Og's size would be able to do that. Now, there are other midrashim that might be questionable, that might be hard, but nonetheless, it does help us understand something, do that. But I think the concept is so true. Moshe Rabbeinu is afraid of Og. He's afraid of Og. What is he afraid of? And Hashem has to tell him, Al Tira Oso, don't be afraid of him. I'm going to put him into your hands. What is Moshe Rabbeinu afraid of? He's just a giant who lives on the other side of the Jordan River. You just beat Sihon, defeated Sihon. Sihon was also a giant. And there are other people that you should be afraid of. Amalek was something that was fearsome. You had other people that you should be afraid of. You had 31 kings in Eretz Canaan that you should be afraid of. Be afraid of Og, and Moshe has to be told, don't be afraid of Og. It's because Og continued the message of Avram Avinu. His methods were the same way of love and brotherhood, and the people that lived along with him were teaching those same teachings of Avram. They were a little bit estranged, and they didn't have it exactly, and when they went to go fight the war against the Jews, against their arch nemesis Yitzchak's children, then clearly they weren't following their own paths. But nonetheless, there's a path, there's an idea that Avram Avinu, that they stood for, that Og stood for, that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of. I was afraid what was going to happen. And to that, you have to say, Al Tiroso, don't be afraid of him. Although they have a power, don't worry about such people. That's not what you have to worry about. That's the concept. Yes?
Eliezer, was that the
Akedah? Eliezer and the two Na'arim, there were two young lads that they brought with them, was Eliezer and Yishmael. Those two were the people that came with them. Yishmael was there as well. How'd he come back? That's another medrash with Meriva. That's another story, how he brought him back. But nonetheless, they were both there. That's one answer as to what could have happened to them. Unfortunately, that's pretty much all we have time for. But I am going to answer. Yeah, I hate doing that also, but that is the way I roll. I will tell you one last one that deals with the Yalkut Shemayim. There's another medrash that I found at the end of Parshas Chayisara. And this is, that was a somewhat of a positive ending. The Nefesh Shrasu B'chorin, the converts of Avram, continued in the ways of Avram. They just didn't have a Yitzchak and a Yaakov and the Shvatim and a Moshe Rabbeinu to help them go even further. They just didn't go any further. But still a positive outcome. There were positive, I guess you can say, reactions to what Avram Avinu was. But here's another medrash. The medrash in Yalkut Shemoni seems to say at the end of Parshas Chayisara that those who had all converted and had received bris milos with Avram Avinu, every single one of them, never lasted. It didn't last for them. It didn't last for their children. They thought that they would have to do one thing and that would be it, and it didn't help them whatsoever. It was a bit of tahara, meaning it purified them a bit, which allows them to be the more moral people in the world at the time. It allowed them to be a little bit more moral, but they went and they degenerated straight back to Avodah Zarah at some point. Maybe through Yitzchak, maybe a little bit later, but eventually, one by one, they left the Avos and did their own thing, which is why when you see Yaakov going down to Mitzrayim, there are 70 souls. Him, his children, and his grandchildren, none of the Gerim made it. None of them made it, none of them lasted. And that's the issue. So the question on such a negative outlook is, so why would Avram Avinu do this in the first place? He spent his whole life, and he comes out with what? With nothing. And the answer is so obvious. Yitzchak would not be the person who he was without the influence of all the people around him until that time. And the truth is, so aside from Yitzchak, even these people, even for the year that they had done good things and they had worked on themselves and become better people and become strong people, even that is worth it. You brought a little more Kiddusha to the world, even if it didn't last. And that's the way we sometimes have to look at things. We may think to ourselves, well, what are the end results of our actions? Maybe we're not going to get anything at all. Maybe nobody's going to be influenced by something that we're doing. And the truth is, it doesn't matter if that influence lasts forever or if the influence lasts 5 minutes. That should be good enough for us to do what we know is the right thing to do. And that's the lesson that you learn from that medrash. But those are, I sort of threw in that second one, but that really is the one answer as to what happened to those nefashos, Shrasu B'chorin, those people that were through Choron. That's how we can understand what happened to Avram Avinu.